In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the golden age of radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing it yourself.
Al Kemp, on the air for Griffin.
It's time to shine. Shine your shoes anyway.
Tony Home Permanent presents...
This is Nora Drake.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. And by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find brand new Chevys at low Washington's birthday prices. We'll join host Dick Bertel in a moment. But first...
Burritt Mutual Savings Bank asks you this question. Why should you save? Burritt Mutual Savings Bank will also try to answer. The reasons for savings are almost endless. One, it can open the door to your new home. Two, it can give you the means to new furniture, a new car, a boat, a vacation. Three, it can help send your children to college. Four, it can give you that glorious feeling of independence and prosperity. Don't ever feel that you have to have large amounts to save. At Burritt, deposits as small as $1 are welcome. Really welcome. Start now and save for all these reasons and perhaps some of your own. If you can't save a lot, save a little. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, where deposits are safe and earn good dividends. Start your account tomorrow.
Member FDIC. And now the host of the Golden Age of Radio, Dick Bertel.
Good evening. And with me once again is the man who collects those wonderful old-time radio programs, Ed Corcoran. Ed, we're going to do something special tonight, aren't we?
Yes, Dick, this is something I've wanted to do for some little time, and we finally had an opportunity to do it, and that's to take a particular year and try to highlight some of the programs that were popular at that time.
And what's the year that you've chosen?
Well, I thought we'd pick something that came out kind of round numbers, so we took 25 and we subtracted it from where we are today, and we got back to 1947, Dick.
And we are going to hear some of the shows that were on the air in 1947 in just a moment. But, you know, I want to take this opportunity, Ed, to acknowledge some of our mail that we've been receiving on the program, and it's rather interesting to receive mail from... long distances, and in this case, we're going to reach all the way out to Illinois, Westchester, Illinois. Don Koneman listens to our show out there. He doesn't listen to it directly, however. Evidently, he gets his on tape.
Yeah, delayed broadcast.
And so he's able to hear us perhaps a week or a month later. But we do have a listener, for example, in North Syracuse, New York, Donald Richardson, who listens to our show. I received a card also this past week from a gentleman in Scranton, Pennsylvania, who tried desperately to hear our broadcast with Brett Morrison and was only able to get bits of it because of the interference. And he's hoping that he, too, will be able to hear a copy of it someday. But it's rather interesting to note that... people from all over are interested in the golden age of radio.
Yes, it's a collector's item, Dick. In many of the catalogs which I receive listing these shows, the golden age is right among them. And there are several other shows like it, but I think we have the best one because we've had the best variety of guests, I would say, over the last 2 years.
Well, let's make sure that we maintain that record. Let's take a look at this year, 1947. Some interesting sidelights happened in that year, Ed. Did you know, for example, that the last streetcars in New York stopped running in 1947?
No, I didn't know that. How about in the Bronx, too, or just in New York?
Just in Manhattan, as a matter of fact. Flying saucers were first talked about and read about in the newspapers in 1947. And to tie it all into radio, Margaret Truman made her radio debut with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra in 1947. I heard that show, as a matter of fact. I didn't want to hear any more of it after I heard that show, but it was interesting, nevertheless.
You get a nasty letter if you keep saying things like that, Dick.
Well, at any rate, there were some major news stories in 1947, as there are every year, and you have something unusual from your files, Ed.
Yes, Dick, I was very fortunate. I found a recording which was done by the United Press, which is now UPI, of course, and they chose to dramatize the top 10 news stories of that year in 1947, and I do have the actual recording that was made for that show.
Well, let's listen to it.
Read all about it. 52 die in New York plane crash.
And here's a bulletin from Washington. President Truman's $300 million plan to fight communism by bolstering Greece and Turkey at last has passed both houses of Congress.
Extra, extra, 1,200 feared dead in Texas City explosion. Read all about it. Read all about it.
After a stormy session, the United Nations General Assembly has voted in favor of the Palestine partition plan. The vote was 33-13 with 10 nations abstaining.
Cavalcade of 1947, presented by the United Press, the world's best coverage of the world's biggest news. The 10 biggest news stories of 1947, as selected by the editors of the United Press. Number 1, the high cost of living and the housing shortage. Number 2, the Cold War. Number 3, the Taft-Hartley labor law. Number 4, the Howard Hughes, General Minute Byers, war contracts investigation. Number 5, the Texas City explosion. Number 6, Princess Elizabeth's romance. Number 7, the partition of India. Number 8, the worst year in history for airplane disasters. Number 9, the World Series, New York versus Brooklyn. Number 10, the Palestine crisis.
Those were the 10 top stories of the year 1947. And Ed, did you feel there was a parallel between the problems then and the problems today?
Yeah, it seemed like we haven't really changed much in 25 years, have we, Dick? The India crisis, Palestine, and Howard Hughes, they're all in the news today, aren't they?
That's as a matter of fact, the Howard Hughes story that was referred to in this dramatic episode of the year 1947 was the one in which he testified before a congressional committee, I believe.
That's right, yes. And that was the tape, or they made a tape of this, of course, and that was used as a voice print identification during this latest go-round about identifying him on that phone conversation he had with the reporters.
So it would seem, at first glance at any rate, that 25 years ago was a long span of time, and on closer examination, it really wasn't that long ago. All right, let's turn our radios on now to the year 1947, some of the big shows, and I think that the first one that we're going to hear was perhaps one of the funniest and one of the most delightful.
It was certainly one of my favorites, Dick, and many viewers, or listeners, I should say, might remember it from television because it later appeared on television and it was a very big hit there as well. I'm referring, of course, to R. Miss Brooks.
Well, of course, you said viewers for just a second, and this was a show that did make a very successful transition to television.
Yes, and strangely enough, with the original cast, if you take some of the other shows like Gunsmoke and the like, they changed the cast around, but all of the performers on radio were the same ones that appeared on television, which was very unusual for that time to do that.
And who are the performers on this show?
Well, we have, of course, Eve Arden as Miss Brooks and Gail Gordon as the principal, Mr. Conklin. And after that, I don't know, Dick, I think Richard Crenna, that's right, he played the part of Walter.
All right. Shall we turn on our radios now to the year 1947 and Our Miss Brooks?
Well, last Friday, Madison High School held its annual winter outing, and Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison, was one of those scheduled to attend.
Yes, this local version of the Polar Bear Club is quite a tradition at school. It was started many years ago by Madison's beloved and hardy founder, Yodar Critch. It has since been carried on by our current principal, the beloved and neurotic Osgood Conklin. Since this frosty festival occurred during our official time off, attendance was not compulsory, But as Mr. Conklin so gracefully put it,
be there.
Everyone was given the opportunity to volunteer for some task or other, and after counting the welts on my back, I volunteered to arrange the lunch basket. Therefore, Friday morning, with the temperature hovering around 40, I found myself in the kitchen of the school cafeteria with my landlady, Mrs. Davis.
Now, you look pretty this morning, Connie. Those earrings you're wearing are just lovely.
What earrings? These are icicles.
It's certainly a dreadful day for a picnic.
I'll never forget last year's little outing. Even the red ants had blue lips. I reminded Mr. Boynton about it the other day. I just couldn't warm up at that picnic. Nothing seemed to help. Heavy clothes, hot coffee.
There must have been something there that could heat you up.
He was, but he didn't. As a matter of fact, he spent most of the day with Miss Enright. You should have seen her showing off, hiking, climbing trees.
Miss Enright's very proud of her athletic ability, isn't she?
She gives me a pain in the sacroiliac. And the way she fawns over Mr. Boynton.
She does have quite a crush on him, doesn't she?
You can say that again.
She does have...
Never mind. Now, where were we?
Quite a crush on him, doesn't she? But I think your feelings toward Daisy Enright are perfectly justified. She's a conniving, ruthless, brazenly flirtatious cat, Connie.
Oh, hi, Miss Brooks. Is this the basket for the picnic over by the wall?
That's it.
Why is it covered with a tablecloth?
That was Mrs. Davis's idea. She said she didn't want the sandwiches to catch cold.
You're two of a kind, all right. Always joking.
Should be nice and cozy driving up to Critch Canyon, just the two of us.
Well, you mean just the four of us.
Four?
Well, Mr. Conklin's wife drove their car over to her mother's for the day, so I invited him to join us.
Oh, dandy. And our other passenger?
Miss Enright had no transportation either.
Miss Enright? Now, that's what I call a nice fourth for bridge. Only I hope it's a real high bridge.
I know you're joking. Miss Enright's very fond of you, Miss Brooks. Why, only this morning she told me how much she admires your informality and your complete lack of ostentatiousness.
Miss Enright said that?
Certainly. She pointed out how most of the female members of our faculty spend precious minutes fussing with their hair and makeup before coming to school. But you, Miss Brooks, she says you come to school even when you look like a witch.
Why bother with your car? We can fly to the canyon on my broom. Look, Mr. Boynton, why do we have to pick up Miss Enright?
Oh, we don't have to pick her up. She's out in the car now. She's planned all sorts of games and contests.
Well, Mr. Boynton, didn't want you to get lonesome in this great big kitchen all by yourself.
But Miss Enright, Miss Brooks is here.
Well, that's what I mean. Oh, how are you, darling?
Hi.
I see you're all dressed for the potato sack race. Oh, is that a skirt?
This potato sack I'm wearing?
Yes.
It's a skirt. Now, may I ask you a question?
Of course.
When are you going to pull the ripcord and bail out of that thing you're wearing?
Oh, she's just a doll, Mr. Boynton. A great big cuddly rag doll. Oh, really, you're so amusing this morning, darling, aren't you? Playful as a kitten.
Yes, Mother.
That's a funny show. That's our Miss Brooks. We'll be back right after this message.
Washington's birthday has come and gone, but the Washington's birthday sale at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks is still in full swing. You see, the people at Russo know that many of you who wanted to get out and take advantage of their Washington's birthday sale couldn't due to poor weather conditions. So they decided to continue their holiday sale on brand new Chevrolets through this Saturday, February 26th. And what a sale it is! Russo Chevrolet has really slashed the prices on its complete line of beautiful 1972 Chevrolets. Visit Russo and see for yourself. You'll discover Impalas, Camaros, Vegas, Corvettes, the complete Chevrolet line at unheard-of savings. But that's not all.
When you purchase any new or designated OK used car from Russo, you'll receive a Channelmaster AM-FM radio and cassette player or an 8-track stereo tape player absolutely free. So, take advantage of the Washington's birthday sale at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Lux, across from Bradley International. Well, now, Ed, we come to one of my very favorite shows from the 1940s, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Were you a faithful listener?
Oh, yes. In fact, that's one of the programs I've tried to collect more of than any other, because it's such a fascinating characterization of Sherlock Holmes, of course.
The actors that our listeners remember, I'm sure, are Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. And they portrayed the characters on the motion picture screen as well.
That's correct. The original film they made was Hound of the Baskervilles, and it was set in the Victorian England. And then two or three pictures later, they brought it up to date, and they had him appearing in the wartime era without the hansom cabs and everything like that. So they took a lot of liberties with the characters in the filming. But in the radio version, all of the plays that were done of the original Conan Doyle works rather than makeshift things that they did in the cinema.
In order to set the stage, they would have Nigel Bruce portraying Dr. Watson recalling his adventures with Sherlock Holmes. And, of course, his amazing deductions come through very well in this excerpt that we're going to play tonight. The announcer is Harry Bartels. So, let's listen to The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invites you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And you know something? I had an adventure tonight I wish you could have shared with me. I had a steak about, an inch and a half thick, tender and juicy, and with it I had a glass of Petri California Burgundy. Now, there's a combination. Try Petri Burgundy with any meat or meat dish. It's just wonderful. And serve it proudly, too, because after all, the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wine. Now I know Dr. Watson's waiting for us, so let's go in and join him.
Come in.
Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. You're quite muffled up tonight, I see. Overcoat, scarf, and gloves. Tip them off and come and join me by the fire.
Thanks, Doctor. Quite a nip in the air tonight.
Yes, there is indeed.
Well, Doctor, you told us last week that tonight's story centered around the activities of a brilliant and beautiful woman.
Yes, my boy. Her name is Irene Adler. But I never knew Holmes to refer to her by any other name than the woman.
She sounds mighty intriguing. How did you happen to meet up with her?
Well, I'll tell you the story from the beginning. One night, it was on the 20th of March, 1888, to be exact, I was returning home from a visit to a patient when my steps led me through Baker Street. Since my marriage, I haven't seen much of Sherlock Holmes. And
you couldn't resist stopping by 221B, I'm sure, Doc.
Of course I couldn't. As I stood outside the well-remembered door, I looked up at the lighted windows and saw the tall, spare figure of my old friend pass twice in dark silhouette against the blind. He was pacing the room swiftly, eagerly, with his head sunk on his chest and his hands clasped behind him. To me, who knew his every mood and habit, his attitude and manner told their own story. He was hot on the scent of some new problem. I rang the bell, and a few moments later, found myself standing before it.
Mary, excuse you, Watson. You look in splendid shape.
Yes, I'm feeling very well, eh?
And in practice again, I see. You didn't tell me that you'd gone back into harness.
Oh, how do you know?
Elementary, my dear chap. If a gentleman walks into my rooms, smelling of iodoform, with a black mark of nitrate of silver on his right forefinger, and a bulge on the left side of his hat, to show where he has secreted his stethoscope. I should be dull indeed if I didn't pronounce him to be an active member of the medical profession.
Same as ever, Holmes. By the way, I'm not interrupting you, am I?
Yes, you are, old fellow, but it's a most welcome interruption.
You're working on a new case?
It looks like it. This letter arrived by the last post today. It's undated and has neither signature nor address. Read it.
You look. They will call upon you tonight at 7:45 a gentleman who desires to consult you upon a matter of the very deepest moment. Your recent services to one of the royal houses of Europe have shown that you are one who may safely be trusted. This account of you we have from all quarters received. Be in your chamber, then, at that hour, and do not take it amiss if your visitor wears a mask. Great God, it all sounds very mysterious. What do you imagine it means?
Look carefully at the note, Watson. What do you deduce from it?
Well, let's see. Well, the man who wrote it was presumably well-to-do. Such paper couldn't be bought for under 0.5 crown a packet. And it's peculiarly strong and stiff.
Peculiar. That's the very word. It's not an English paper at all. Hold it up to the light. You notice anything?
Yes. There's a large E with a small G, and a large G with a small T woven into the texture of the paper.
What does that suggest you?
The name of the maker, no doubt, or perhaps his monogram.
Not at all, my dear fellow. The G with a small T stands for Gesellschaft, which is the German for company.
And the EG?
That stands for Igria. The German-speaking country in Bohemia, not far from Carlsbad.
So the paper was made in Bohemia?
Undoubtedly. The man who wrote the note is a German.
Well, how do you know that?
Observe the curious construction of the sentence. This account of you we have from all quarters received. A Frenchman or a Russian could not have written that. It's the German who is so discourteous to his birds.
Oh, there's your current now. I'd better go home.
No, unless you have to.
Well, I thought perhaps...
Ah, then, my dear chap, stay by all means. I'm lost without my Boswell, and this promises to be interesting. I told Mrs. Hudson to let the masked visitor come upstairs unannounced. Come in.
You mean that's where you're going to leave us?
Tune in next week.
What was the name of this show?
That was A Scandal in Bohemia, Dick, which is one of the better ones that was written, of course.
We'll continue with our show, saluting the year 1947 on radio, right after this.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on Radio 1080 WTIC in Hartford. Brought to you by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find brand new Chevys at low Washington's birthday prices. And by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889.
Buying a new car in 1972? If so, bank credit may cost you less. At Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, we offer low-cost, convenient auto loans. But we can do more than just put you on the road. We help you establish credit with a bank. We give you cash buyer leverage, and above all, you either start or continue a relationship with a large and progressive mutual savings bank. Once your credit is established, you may want to purchase a new home, improve your existing home, or take a personal loan to finance your trip across the country. Whatever your borrowing needs, it will pay you to start doing business with the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Once an established Burritt customer with good credit, you become a preferred Burritt borrower. So, don't wait. Come into any office of the Big B, Burritt Mutual Savings Bank.
And now your host, Dick Bertel.
We're recalling the year 1947 on radio, and Ed, so far we've been playing the top shows of the evening hours. But, of course, daytime had its own list of shows, didn't it?
It certainly did, Dick. It certainly was at its peak at that time. All of the daytime soap operas, as they were called, including such shows as Mary Noble, Backstage Wife, Just Plain Bill, Ethel and Albert, Road of Life, The Right to Happiness, Lorenzo Jones, Stella Dallas. You can really go on with a very long list of the shows that were on during that time, Dick.
Well, which one comes to mind as being uppermost, let's say?
Well, being somewhat of a gourmet myself, I think it would have to be Ann Jenny because, you know, with chicken fat, she was able to work wonders with these recipes.
I think you've got Ann Jenny and Bob and Ray confused there. But that's true. Ann Jenny would offer recipes and a story, all for the price of one.
Yes, and she had as her announcer, Dan Seymour, who is now a heaven advertising agency in New York, one of the largest, I believe. So it just shows radio was the land of opportunity in those days.
Ed, in addition to Dan Seymour, the announcer on the program, there were some other people who participated, and the one I'm thinking of is the fellow who portrayed Aunt Jenny's Whistling Canary.
Yes, apparently they couldn't depend on the bird to follow cues correctly, so they brought in an imitator by the name of Henry Boyd, who apparently fooled a lot of people because no one ever suspected that it was wasn't for real.
All right, here we go. Back to the year 1947 for Aunt Jenny.
Time now for Spry's double feature treat of the day. Aunt Jenny's thrilling real-life story with Lanny Ross.
And fish fillets broiled to appetizing perfection with Spry.
Come in, folks. It's Spry time here in Aunt Jenny's cheery kitchen. And what do you know, Aunt Jenny has the answer to a meatless meal all wrapped up and ready to deliver.
And you know, ladies, that even with controls lifted on meat, it's still scarce in most places and prices will be high for some time. So fish is still a mighty welcome food. And dairy me, Spry is scarce too, so we have to be careful with it. But of course, it takes less Spry to broil than to fry.
And say, fish broiled the Spry way is something for the book. It's appetizingly brown and crispy outside, and inside moist, tender, and full of flavor.
Ladies, we can't stress flavor too much. Because no matter how nourishing a meal may be, it isn't appetizing unless each food flavor comes through in its full, fresh goodness. Pure All Vegetable Spry is the shortening that saves flavor and makes everything you bake, broil, or fry taste more delicious.
Folks, right after the story, Aunt Jenny's going to tell you exactly how to broil fish the Spry way. Meanwhile, remember, Spry is the pure all vegetable shortening that puts mmm into your meals. For all you bake and fry, rely on Spry.
Well, friends, last night was certainly a big night here in Littleton. It was the night of our fine performance of the operetta Naughty Marietta, put on by the young folks of Littleton for the benefit of the hospital. And the wonderful part of it was, of course, that Lanny Ross, being here in town this week, sang the role of Captain Dick. I guess it was kind of an exciting evening for Lanny, too, what with the extra little problem that Connie Barkham caused almost at the last minute. But suppose I start at the beginning, just before the curtain went up and the performance started last night. Calvin went backstage to say a word to Lanny.
Well, well, just a few minutes curtain time. How's everything going backstage here?
All right, I guess, Mr. Wheeler. We're too nervous to know.
Oh, stage fright?
Yes.
Oh, well, you'll get over that when the curtain goes up. Where's Lanny Ross? I want a word with him.
Oh, over there with that mob around him.
Oh, thanks. Guess I'll have to kind of elbow my way in.
Hi there, Lanny.
Hi, Calvin. Now, you folks will excuse me for just a minute. Please, just a... Calvin, is there a good house out front?
I never knew you could pack so many people into this old auditorium, Lanny. Every seat and all the standing room sold.
Good.
That's a mighty fine thing you're doing for Littleton, Lanny. It was your name that drew this kind of a crowd, you know.
I'm glad to do it. Now, let's hope there'll be a great big check for the Littleton Hospital out of this night's work.
5 minutes till the overture starts, everybody. 5 minutes.
Oh, dear. Well, I better get back to my seat.
Yes.
I don't want to miss any of this show, Lanny.
Yes. I wonder...
Were you looking for somebody?
Connie Barkham. Funny thing, I haven't seen her.
I'll be around after the show.
Yes. Mm-hmm. See you later. Connie Barkham.
Morris,
has anybody seen Connie Barkham?
Somebody saw her sitting on the fire escape a minute ago, Mr. Ross.
Which fire escape?
That way, Mr. Ross.
Thank you very much. Connie, what are you doing out here? It's almost curtain time.
Hello, Lanny.
Are you crying?
Uh-uh.
You certainly are. What's the matter?
Oh, Lanny, I'm in the most awful mess.
Again?
Yes, again. Seems like I always jump right out of the skillet into the fire.
All right, come on now, tell me. What's the trouble?
Well, it's all my own fault again.
Maybe if I knew what it was. Come on, Connie.
Well, it's Hal Moyer. We were engaged, you know.
No, I didn't know, but I'm glad. Hal Moyer's a nice boy.
I told him I talked to you about going back to New York and trying again for the stage. And he said...
He said what?
He said, go ahead.
Oh.
He broke our engagement just like that. He doesn't want to stand in my way.
Well, I call that right decent of him, don't you?
Oh, Annie, you said yesterday a career is no good unless you're willing to give up absolutely everything else in the world that stands in your way.
Well, what do you want more than anything else in the world, Connie?
I want to stay right here in Littleton and marry Hal.
And that's what she did.
Yeah, well, you don't have to wait to the end.
Who portrayed Aunt Jenny?
Well, that was Edith Spencer, Dick, and I believe that's the only role she ever really did on radio. She just made a career out of being Aunt Jenny.
Well, that takes us back a good many years. We'll be right back after this. How good are you at avoiding temptation? Well, the folks at Russo Chevrolet hope you give in to at least one temptation easily, the urge to buy a new car. Russo knows that you're probably considering a new car, right? And you've probably been looking over the 1972 Chevrolets and finding them very attractive. Well, now's the ideal time to give in to that new car temptation during the Washington's birthday sale at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks. You see, now through Saturday, you can really save on the brand new Chevy of your choice. Maybe you'd like a luxurious Impala or a sporty Camaro or maybe a versatile Vega. Whatever your choice, Russo is sure to have it at a low holiday price. And to make this temptation almost irresistible, Russo will give you a Channel Master AM/FM radio and cassette player or an 8-track stereo tape player with the purchase of any new or designated OK used car. Give in to the new car temptation during the Washington's birthday sale at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, across from Bradley International. Well, let's get back now to nighttime radio, Ed, because I think that most of our listeners are most familiar with the great radio shows that they heard in the evening hours. And we must not forget the great radio comedians. Who were some of them in 1947?
Well, some of the shows that come to mind were Duffy's Tavern, of course, Burns and Allen, Fibber McGee and Molly, Fred Allen, Herb Schreiner, Red Skelton, Charlie McCarthy, and, of course, Bob Hope. But the real kingpin, the man whose humor has survived till today even, is, of course, Jack Benny. He was really, really great.
Sunday nights at 7 o'clock back in 1947, you were listening to this.
Mr. Benny, please. The lesson she is over. Will you please pay me my money now and don't keep me waiting like always?
Oh, yes, Professor. I'll go down my vault and get it. Oh, excuse me, there's the door.
The money for the lesson, please.
I'll be right back.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello, Dennis. Come on in. Say, Dennis, didn't I see you at the Notre Dame-USC football game yesterday?
Yeah, I was there.
Well, I had an awful time getting my tickets. How'd you get yours?
From my cousin. He plays for Notre Dame.
Notre Dame? Oh, of course. Certainly. You're Irish. What's your cousin's name?
Kazakowski.
Kazakowski?
His real name is McNulty.
What?
He changed it to get on the team.
Well, anyway, there was a lot of excitement, and I thought Notre Dame played great.
So did UCLA.
Dennis, UCLA didn't play yesterday.
USC sent for them in the third quarter. Well, I gotta run along. Goodbye, Mr. Benny.
So long, Dennis. Oh, by the way, kid, is your mother going to have a Christmas tree?
Yeah, but this year she's gonna buy it from somebody else.
Well, if she changes her mind, I'll be at Sunset in Fairfax.
Okay.
Goodbye. See, I better start a week earlier this Christmas. I had to burn 10 of them last year.
Mr. Benny, you haven't paid me for your lesson.
Oh, yes, Professor. How thoughtless of me. I'll go into my vault and get your money. Gee, I wonder who keeps it further underground, me or Fort Knox. I'm going to ask him someday when I'm there to collect the rent. Who goes there?
What's the password?
The British are coming.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Benny.
Yes, yes. We've had that password a long time now, haven't we, Ed?
Yes, ever since that night you hung the lantern in the old North Church.
Oh, yes.
By the way, Mr. Benny, did that fellow on horseback ever make it?
Why?
I had $2 on him.
Well, excuse me a minute, Ed. I'm going to open the ball.
How much money are you putting in?
Oh, nothing. You know, I'm taking some out.
Oh? Sickness in the family?
No, everything's all right. Well, I'm going to open the vault now.
Shall I take a sleeping pill?
No, Ed, you can watch. It's all right. See, the combination is right to 45, left to 60, back to 15, and left to 110. There. Why be half saint? Now, let's see. One violin lesson, $1.50. There it is. Well, see you later, Ed.
All right. Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, I meant to ask you, how are things on the outside?
Oh, it's December. Winter is nearly here. And the leaves are falling.
Hey, that must be exciting.
No, Ed. People are wearing clothes now.
Oh. Uh-huh. Well... Goodbye, Mr. Benny.
Goodbye, Ed. Well, now here you are, Professor. $1.50. Here's your dollar, and here's the... Oh, darn it. It was so dark down there, I got the wrong coin. Professor, have you got change for a Spanish doubloon?
It's great to hear Benny. His humor is as fresh today as it was 25 years ago. I suppose that's why he was so great, Ed.
Yeah, I think he has a little different image today. You know, he wears the glasses now, and he has that pouting expression, which is so familiar to TV audiences. But it was all done with the voice in radio, and it was really tremendous. And this scene we did was probably the most famous. I think of all the ones he ever did, it's the one I remember the most anyway.
Well, it certainly was my favorite. We'll be back right after this.
Get smile power, the kind of confident, contented countenance that comes from cash. Salted away cash in a Burritt Mutual Savings Bank at the highest legal savings bank interest rate. And you don't need a lot of money to do it. You can save a little. It's the constant, patient, every payday habit of saving that really counts. At the Big B, we love your small deposits. We know they grow for you and for us. Result, we will both have smile power. Plus, we help with our high interest rates paid to you on your savings. Burritt Mutual Savings Bank. Deposits insured to $20,000 by FDIC.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater. Starring Victor Mature, Colleen Gray, and Richard Widmark in Kiss of Death. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
That was easily the biggest show on radio in 1947, the Lux Radio Theater. It was radio's version of Monday Night at the Movies.
That's right, Dick. That was their practice, was to take current films and to dramatize them in an hour-long format, usually with the same cast that were in the movies themselves.
Some great movies were made in 1947, Ed. Pictures like Boomerang, which was filmed right here in Stamford, Connecticut, Crossfire, Great Expectations, Life with Father, starring William Powell and Irene Dunne, Miracle on 34th Street, which is still shown on television every Christmas, Odd Man Out. What other films were made during 1947?
Well, I recall Gentleman's Agreement, which was kind of an epic film, and Mother Wore Tights, Dan Daly. But a film we're going to hear the radio version of was exceptionally good. That was Kiss of Death. Do you recall that? Did you remember seeing it when it came out, Dick?
I certainly do recall that film. And I recall Richard Widmark with that sinister laugh of his. Do you remember it?
Yes. One might have felt he'd be typecast because, he started out with such an unusual voice, or unusual characterization at least, but he never did that role again.
Well, in many cases, the motion picture actor was, in a sense, out of his element when he stepped before the radio microphone to do the film version on the Lux Radio Theater, but not the case with Richard Widmark.
No, he served a long apprenticeship in radio. In fact, he was the original Albert and Ethelyn Albert. He did many, many dramatic shows long before he ever went to Hollywood, so that and coming back to do the Lux was like homecoming for him because he had done it all before many times.
Well, of course, this was an hour-long radio dramatization. We can't present it all, but we can present an excerpt from the Lux Radio Theater production of Kiss of Death, starring Victor Mature, Colleen Gray, and a new actor, Richard Widmark.
I don't think we got any tables tonight, Mr. Bianco.
I'm not looking for a table. Is Tommy Udo here?
No.
Thanks. I'll see you again.
Take a tip, Bianco. Don't ever. What do you want?
Come on, step aside. I got a date here with Tommy Udo.
Udo ain't here.
Okay, I'll wait for him.
Udo ain't here. Now call.
Hello?
Mr. D'Angelo?
Nick, where are you? We've got a general alarm out for you.
Never mind that. I'm in town. I've been looking for Udo, and I've found him.
Where is he?
I told you were going to play this my way.
Udo's my job, Nick. You keep out of this.
Take it easy, Mr. D'Angelo. The only reason I'm calling you is that I may need some help.
I want you to go to the 37th Precinct Police Station. Bring some men along. If my plan doesn't work, I'll be calling you there. How long will it take you to get uptown?
About 20 minutes, but Nick, listen.
Look, I'll give you a half hour. When you get to the police station, just wait for my call. Hey, you.
I said okay if you want to use the telephone, mister, but you're too late to eat. We close at 12. You see, there's nobody here.
I'm looking for Tommy Udo.
He's not here.
I saw him come in a few minutes ago, Udo and a couple of others. They're in that room back there. Just tell him that Nick Bianco wants to see him.
My pet.
Hello, Tommy. Tommy, I gotta talk to you.
Go ahead, talk. I'm listening.
I'd like to talk to you, not these characters.
Are you coming?
Who asked you anything? My pet wants to talk to me. Go on, beat it, both of you.
Wait over here, Tommy.
Okay, pal, what's on your mind?
I've got to square myself with you, Tommy.
There's nothing to square. You're my pal. You're smart, too. I didn't know how smart till I saw you in court. You fooled me, Nick. And that takes a big man. Yeah, big man.
Okay, play it straight, Tommy. I squealed on you. You got a right to be sore. Now, what are you going to do about it?
I ain't going to do nothing. You did nothing to me. They let me off, didn't they? We're going right on being pals, you and me. We're going to have some fun together. Lots of fun. You got a wife and kids, ain't you, pal?
Yeah.
They're going to have some fun, too. I'm going to enjoy meeting your family.
lay off of them, Tommy.
Why, huh? Kids like to have fun. You and me and your wife and your kids. From now on, lots of fun.
I'm telling you, lay off of them.
Is that all you got to say to me?
I thought you'd listen to reason. But if it's trouble you're looking for, you're going to get it. Leave me and my family alone, or maybe I ain't through singing.
What of it, Tail? I'm clean. They can't try me twice on the same rap.
No, not only Larry Young killing. Maybe I know some other tunes. When we were together, you told me a lot of things. You got your eyes full of smoke, and you talk plenty just like the squirt that you are. You talked your fool head off, and I ain't forgetting any of it.
You sure, huh, Tail?
You gave me enough to burn you 100 times over, if I can get the other witnesses to back me up. You even gave me a pretty good idea where to look for those other witnesses. Take your hand out of your pocket. You're dumb, you know it, but you're not that dumb. You'd get life if they found a gun on you. Now, remember this. Touch my family, and you will hear singing like you never heard before. Now, beat it. Peddle your papers. Go on, blow!
Luigi.
Yes, Mr. Udo.
This is my pal, Mr. Bianco. He's a big man, biggest man in town. I want to show him what I think of him. I want you to give him your DeLuke short dinner.
Oh, but, Mr. Udo, the kitchen is closed.
Then open it, just quick!
Yes, Mr. Udo.
Nothing's too good for my pal. Your best short dinner and a bottle of that good wine.
Yes, right away, Mr. Udo.
Enjoy yourself, big man. Enjoy your dinner. Everything's on me.
Yes, Nick, this is D'Angelo.
I just talked to Tommy Udo. I tried to scare him off, but it didn't work. There's only one thing for me to do now. I'm going to give him to you just the way you want him, with a gun in his hand.
Nick, for the love of heaven, where are you? We'll come and get you.
I'm setting him up for you, Mr. D'Angelo. He's waiting for me outside this place in a black sedan. I've needled him to the point where he's got to get me. It'll take you 2 minutes to get here. In exactly 2 minutes. I'm walking out to that black sedan.
I'm having this call traced, Nick. You might as well tell me where you are.
I'll tell you. Udo will shoot to kill. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Come in from both ends of the street. Forget the signs or he'll throw his gun away. Now get it. The name of the place is Luigi's. It's on 125th Street, just around the corner from where you are.
Luigi's. Okay, Nick.
Then come on. You've got exactly 2 minutes. Don't miss.
Luigi.
Yes, your dinner with Ferguson now.
Eat it yourself.
Yes, something wrong, Mr.
Here.
Gun? No. Why, you give me a gun.
Take it. I won't need a gun anymore. Keep it as a souvenir. And in case anybody asks you, remember I gave it to you.
What's the matter, big man? You turned yellow? You used to do your own shooting.
Just say the word.
Start the car. Give me that gun. All right, Tail, start running.
Why?
Why, he says? Why, he says? Just twice!
Come here, shall we? It's Nick, all right.
He's dead?
No. Get an ambulance.
Yes, sir.
Nick. Nick.
Did you get him?
Yeah. And alive. Thanks, Nick.
I'm glad you got here, Miss Bianco.
I came as quickly as I could. Nick, where is he?
In the operating room.
He
may die. I don't know. The doctor, well, they say he has a 50-50 chance.
Nick would settle for that.
Yes, I think he would.
Sometimes out of the worst comes the best. You got what you wanted, Mr. D'Angelo. Nick got what he wanted. And I got all I ever wanted. I got Nick.
Ed, you know, that's a frightening story, as little as we happen to hear of it tonight. It's just as frightening on radio as it was on the motion picture screen.
Yes, Dick, and I think it comes over very well because of Richard Widmark playing the role on radio, because I think anyone else doing it, it would lose some of the impact that it had on the screen.
And he certainly had the experience in radio, didn't he?
Yes, you could really tell he knew his way around on these scripts, no question.
We'll be back in just a moment. Washington's birthday has come and gone, but the Washington's birthday sale at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks is still in full swing. You see, the people at Russo know that many of you who wanted to get out and take advantage of their Washington's birthday sale couldn't due to poor weather conditions. So they've decided to continue their holiday sale on brand new Chevrolets through this Saturday, February 26th. And what a sale this is. Russo Chevrolet has really slashed the prices on its complete line of beautiful 1972 Chevrolets. Visit Russo and see for yourself. You'll discover Impalas, Camaros, Vegas, Corvettes, the complete Chevrolet line at unheard-of savings. But that's not all. When you purchase any new or designated OK used car from Russo, you'll receive a Channelmaster AM/FM radio and cassette player, or an 8-track stereo tape player, absolutely free. So take advantage of the Washington's birthday sale at Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, across from Bradley International. Well, Ed, we've saluted the year 1947 tonight, and I'd like to do this again sometime, single out a particular year, maybe a decade, let's say the 30s or even the 20s sometime, if we can go back that far, to show our listeners what radio was like in the very early days. I do want to remind our listeners that we'll be back again in March, Wednesday night, March 22nd. You might want to write that down. Wednesday night, March 22nd at 9:05, when next we present the Golden Age of Radio. Until then, this is Dick Bertel.
This is Ed Corcoran.
Good night.
The Golden Age of Radio has been brought to you by Burritt Mutual Savings Bank, serving Central Connecticut since 1889. And by Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks, where you'll find brand new Chevys at low Washington's birthday prices. The program was engineered by Bob Sherrago and Dick French. The Golden Age of Radio was edited and produced by Brian Hartnett. This is Al Terzi.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Camay, the mild beauty soap for a smoother, softer complexion.
Rinse-o white and rinse-o bright.
Broadcasting from New York City, the Lucky Strike program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and Julian.
A dancing program from the Paradise Restaurant in the Great White Way of Manhattan, New York City. Played by Glenn Miller and his orchestra.